I'm Jamie Bologna, and this is a special edition of Radio Boston. Let's go live now to Senator Elizabeth Warren, speaking from her home in Cambridge.
And today I announced an exploratory committee for President of the United States. I never thought I would run for anything ever in my life, but America's middle class is getting hollowed out, and opportunity for too many of our young people is shrinking. So I'm in this fight all the way. Right now, Washington works great for the wealthy and the well-connected. It's just not working for anyone else. But I am optimistic. I believe in what we can do together. I'm going to build a grassroots campaign. It's already got people from all across this country who are going to be part of it, and together we're going to make change. And if people out there see it and want to be part of it, I hope they go to ElizabethWarren.com and join us, because this is how we're going to build the movement that will change America. So, Senator, thank you all for being here. You have a question?
You know the urgency that a lot of Democrats feel about defeating Donald Trump in 2020. What's your message to the Democratic primary voter who says, I love where Senator Warren stands on the issues, but I worry about electability. I worry about a campaign more about Native American ancestry than the middle class.
You know, look, I'm in this fight because I understand what's happening to working families. I grew up in a paycheck-to-paycheck family. And my big chance was a commuter college that cost $50 a semester. I run for office because I'm grateful down to my toes for the opportunities that were given to me. And I am determined that we will give those same opportunities, not just to some of our kids, but to all of our kids. I think when we fight for something positive, for something big, when we show, not just tell, but show what Democrats will get out there and make happen, I think that's how we win.
Senator,
sure.
Do you think your politics are too polarizing for a national audience?
You know, look, the way I see it right now, Washington works great for giant drug companies, but just not for people who are trying to get a prescription filled. Washington works great for for-profit colleges and student loan outfits, but not for young people who are getting crushed by student loan debt. And you could keep going through the list. The problem we've got right now in Washington is that it works great for those who've got money to buy influence. And I'm fighting against that, and you bet it's going to make a lot of people unhappy. But at the end of the day, I don't go to Washington to work for them. Our government should be working for the people, and that's the movement I'm going to lead.
Senator, you articulated this very point throughout the course of your career, and you saw a real estate developer from New York expropriate that message in 2016. How do you basically convince people that this message is still a message that belongs to the Democratic Party, given that it's, again, it's been expropriated and used effectively by a real estate developer?
We have to get out there and be clear about what we're fighting for, and then we got to show we're willing to fight for it. It's not enough just to talk the talk. We've actually got to be willing to get out and walk the walk. And that means we've got to stand behind the kinds of changes that will matter in the lives of everyday people. And when that means standing up to big drug companies, we won't do what this administration has done, and that is said, raise prices whenever you want. We'll say we're going to make real change.
Follow-up, how does your message compare to that of Sherrod Brown, for example, and others who are making some of the same points?
You know, I think it's great that we have a strong and growing group of Democrats who are making these arguments, who are fighting these fights. That's how we build a movement. We do it together.
Senator Warren, you have not been afraid to take on Donald Trump really head-to-head in the past. Do you expect that you will need to go head-to-head, toe-to-toe with him and hurl it right back at him, as you know he has already started to do with you? Is that part of winning this?
Look, I think the central part of winning this is to get out and talk with people about what we're fighting for. We want a government that works not just for the rich and the powerful. We want a government that works for everyone. And we can make that happen. We have to do it together. I think that's how we win.
Senator Warren, now that you have had a few weeks to think about this, if you were to do it over would you handle the release of the DNA test any differently today?
You know, look, I've put it all out there. It's there for anyone to see. But at the end of the day, what this is going to be about, this election going forward, is going to be about the tens of millions of families across this country who work hard, who play by the rules, and who just time after time take one body blow after another. It has been decades in which profits have gone through the roof and workers' incomes have stayed flat, in which the costs of housing have gone up, the costs of health care have gone up, the costs of an education have gone up, and yet families are getting more money to cover all of that. I think that's going to be the central issue in this campaign. Who do you think government should work for? Republicans, Donald Trump, have made clear they think government should work for the wealthy and the well-connected. And right now, that's exactly what it's doing. I think it ought to work for everyone else, and that's what this fight is about.
Does Super PACs have a place in this race?
I'm sorry?
Do Super PACs have a place in this race? Would you take support from Super PACs?
So, look, I believe that as Democrats, the way we're going to win in 2020 is by building a grassroots movement all across this country. And that means we have to build this movement with small-dollar donors, with volunteers, with real people. I don't think we ought to be running campaigns that are funded by billionaires, whether it goes through super PACs or their own money that they're spending. Democrats are the party of the people. And the way we make that clear is we join together and we fund our campaigns. We make our campaigns work through the people. By the way, today already, since I've made the announcement this morning, I've already received donations from all 50 states, the District of Columbia, and Puerto Rico. That's how you build a grassroots campaign. That's what I believe in.
Massachusetts voters, you just won re-election.
Yep.
Your message to voters who say now she's more focused on running for president rather than representing Massachusetts.
You know,
what's your take on that?
I'm in the fight for all of our families. It's the same fight that drew me in to elected politics to begin with. I want to see an America that works, not just for some people, but an America that works for all of us. That's why
Are
I'm
you
in
and your
this.
Family ready
so,
for this?
Well, you can actually, I have to say, Bailey is really behaving himself here. He looks ready for it. You know, I'm about to go off and make phone calls to some supporters all around the country. Tonight, Bruce and I are going to do what we do every New Year's Eve. We're going to watch Casablanca. Cheer at all the cheering parts and cry at all the sad parts and have a good evening. And I will see all of you, I hope, again very soon. Happy New Year to all of you. Take
Bruce,
care.
Happy New Year, thank you. Guys.
That's Senator Elizabeth Warren speaking outside of her home in Cambridge. I'm Jamie Bologna, and you're listening to Radio Boston. We, of course, are hearing from Warren because she said today that she'll be forming an exploratory committee, which will allow her to raise money and fill staff positions in preparation for a likely 2020 run for the presidency. And donations, she claims, came in from all 50 states thus far. She just made her progressive case for the presidency, wanting a government that works for everyone. And to get into more of the nuts and bolts of this possible Elizabeth Warren run for the presidency, I want to turn now to WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks. Anthony, are you there?
Hey, Jamie. Good to be with you.
Hey, how are you?
I'm well.
Also with us on the line is Kimberly Atkins from Washington. She's the chief Washington reporter and columnist for the Boston Herald. Hi, Kimberly.
Hi there. Hi there. How are you?
Good, good. So first, I just want to get both of your reactions real quick to what you heard Elizabeth Warren say there outside of her home in Cambridge. Anthony.
Yeah, well, Jamie, I mean, her message has been remarkably consistent for a long time, and she's already done a lot to prepare for a presidential run. She's raised lots of money. She's campaigned across the country for fellow Democrats. She's been raising her national profile. And so in many ways, this announcement this morning wasn't really surprising to any of us who've been watching this. We've been expecting this. And really what you heard was an appeal for a progressive view of government in this country. And this is sort of the pitch that Warren has been making for a long, long time. And She wants to carry it all the way to the White House. And there's a lot of reasons to believe that this is a pitch that can appeal to a lot of people across the country. And there's also a lot of reasons to believe that there are a lot of obstacles between here and the White House for Elizabeth Warren. But consider this day one. Consider this, you know, she's off to the races, as they say, and she's sort of the first in among the major potential candidates. And that's for good reason, because, you know, filing for an exploratory committee means that you're essentially setting up the means to raise a lot of money to attract staff. And so she's first in a sense, and for good reason.
Yeah. And I mean, at the same time, Kimberly, you know, in what we just heard from her, she didn't go directly after Trump. She dodged the question on the DNA testing. What do you make of the timing of all of this?
Yeah, I mean, I think the timing, it's exactly right. It's meant to get out early in what will be a very crowded field, try to lock down that apparatus, which includes staffing, sort of try to claim that front runner status, and possibly some people who may not have the fundraising prowess that she has may think twice as they ponder whether they too will jump in the race. I think in January, you're going to see a bit of a free-for-all. A lot of people will announce either exploratory committees or outright candidacies. I think we'll start seeing that in the upcoming weeks. So she was trying to get out ahead, but in terms of dodging all the questions that was asked, I was listening as she kept saying, you know, we're going to build this movement.
She stayed on message, yeah.
Yeah, and we're Washington only works for the rich and powerful, and we need to change that, and we're building a movement. That was the answer to every question, whether the question was about Trump or whether her DNA test or anything else. And so we're seeing her today stay very much on message, and that is something that she's going to try to do throughout her campaign. As folks here in Washington know, she, for most of her time here, didn't talk to the press, in part
right.
because she always wanted to stay on message and didn't want to be stopped by folks like us in the hallways who may try to veer her off of that. But we'll see a lot more of that carefully answering of questions as she moves forward.
And Anthony, since she was asked about the DNA test and her heritage there outside her home in Cambridge, I do want to ask you about something that Chris Saliza, a political commentator at CNN, wrote today. He said that, you know, her attempt earlier this year to put questions about her heritage to rest was botched and a disaster. He went on to say that it, quote, raised doubts even in the minds of her most loyal supporters about her capacity to run and win in 2020. Is that a fair analysis? And do you think this question will keep dogging her?
Well, I think the question probably will keep dogging her. I guess if you're Elizabeth Warren, the one positive thing you could say about that is better sort of to get it out of the way early, because you'd think that sooner or later this is going to run out of gas. But yeah, I mean, she definitely made an effort to kind of respond first and foremost to Donald Trump's endless prodding of her, calling her Pocahontas. Mm-hmm. And it did seem like a sort of naive idea that you could sort of confront the president with facts. So she does this DNA test. The DNA test provides pretty compelling evidence that she has Indian American, Native American ancestry. But Donald Trump has never been one to be bothered by facts. So in a way, this played right into his wheelhouse. And he just made fun of the low percentage of the Indian ancestry in her bloodline. And then there's the whole sort of controversy about using DNA technology to prove sort of racial identity. I mean, that's a sort of controversial thing in itself. Mm-hmm. So on two levels, it seemed like a kind of botched effort on her part. You know, but I think what she's hoping she can do, and Kimberly was talking about it just a moment ago, is that if you stay on message and you keep talking about the way the middle class is being hollowed out, the way working Americans are essentially being assaulted by a corrupt federal government, that message will take hold and carry the day. And, you know, it's worth noting that Donald Trump talked about draining the swamp. I mean, that was one of his central themes when he ran for president. And it worked for him in large part. Now, obviously, you can debate whether he has drained the swamp or not, but that he keyed into that idea for a good reason, because people care about that.
Well, and I think this is the kind of message, too, that we were hearing from Bernie Sanders in 2016, a middle class hollowed out, a Washington that doesn't work for everyone, a grassroots movement. And to that point, WBUR spoke with Jeffrey Berry. He's a political science professor at Tufts University. And he told us that this early announcement is a move aimed specifically at Sanders.
She's very intent on pushing him out of the race as quickly as possible and getting Sanders 2016 supporters on her side and building up a coalition.
Kimberly, what do you make of that analysis there?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that of all the potential buzzed about Democratic candidates so far, Bernie Sanders is clearly the one who most overlaps Elizabeth Warren's lane in terms of their message of progressivism. They've sort of been two sides of the same coin for a really long time. But I don't think that he's the only one that she's trying to push. I think she's trying to push other folks who may not have the money or the name recognition who are really pondering if this is something that they want to go through. And she also wants to be a part of the conversation when it comes to other people who she's likely not going to push out. But she wants to be a part of that, the discussions as they begin to announce their plans. Folks like Senator Kamala Harris, mm-hmm. Senator Cory Booker, Congressman Beto O'Rourke. She wants to get her name out there first and get some fundraising under her belt before the race really starts to get crowded.
So, Anthony, you covered the 2018 midterms, as you did, Kimberly. And Warren is fresh off a second term win in the Senate. She captured 61% of the vote, while Jeff Deal, her challenger, took 36%. But, you know, Massachusetts is considered pretty safe ground for Democrats. And Charlie Baker, a Republican, got more votes than she did here in Massachusetts. He got 67%. Do you think that's a warning sign for Warren going forward nationally?
I mean, I think it's incredibly awkward or sort of, you know, we got to be cautious about talking about polls two
sure.
years before an election. But, you know, I think you raise a good point, Jamie. I mean, one of the sort of rules of the game, I guess, is, she managed to win re-election fairly easily in blue state Massachusetts. But Charlie Baker won more Democratic votes than she did. And, you know, the polling that we've done, Elizabeth Warren is popular enough, certainly popular enough to win, but she has fairly high negatives as well. And so, obviously, that would be a concern. I mean, look, any candidate is going to have a set of concerns going into just about any race. That would certainly be among the concerns that Elizabeth Warren would have. Why, if she has such high negatives in Massachusetts, imagine what they might be in a state that's a little more red.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I think that sort of speaks to the biggest challenge, and that is there are lots of prominent Massachusetts politicians, and you can go down the list from Mitt Romney to Michael Dukakis to John Kerry to going back to Paul Tsongas, all kinds of people.
Ted Kennedy. Kimberly, you tweeted this out earlier today, yeah.
Ted Kennedy, obviously, yeah. So, you know, it becomes increasingly difficult to make this case across the country that a very liberal, someone who's associated with an organization like Harvard University is somehow the right person to carry the mantle for Democrats in a general election.
Well, Anthony,
it can happen, but it's a challenge that she's going to have to deal with.
And to that point, the Republican National Committee issued a statement today. RNC Chairwoman Ronna McDaniel said Senator Warren couldn't be more out of touch, and with her lack of support from voters, including in her home state, on top of her phony claim to minority status, now that she's formally running, America will see her for what she is, another extreme far-left obstructionist and a total fraud. That's one view. Stick with me here, Kimberly and Anthony, real quick, because I want to bring in Massachusetts Republican activist and political writer Ed Lyons for his take. Hi, Ed.
Hey, Jamie. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining us here. So I just read that statement there from the RNC, but what's your take on all of this today?
Well, I'm glad that everybody's finally admitting that our senator is actually running. She has been for months. I mean, she was ready to take donations from Puerto Rico all right away, but, you know, she's very good at her job. I'm a little concerned. I like what I heard earlier. I do think that, you know, what sells in Massachusetts might not sell elsewhere. I think that she will be easily portrayed as sort of the liberal elite, you know, a well-paid law professor who is from a very blue state. I'm not sure that's the best person to carry the flag going forward for the Democrats. It's not up to me, but I agree with those objections. Also, as a Massachusetts resident, I'm a little concerned about sort of her kind of weighing kind of what's good for her presidential campaign versus what's good for us in Massachusetts. Perhaps her maximum attack on Donald Trump all the time might not be in our interest in the crisis to come when Robert Mueller reports.
Right, right. Well, but so, Ed, I do want to ask you about this idea that, you know, we heard Trump voters say that they would have gone, or some Trump voters say they would have gone for Bernie Sanders if he had been a choice. And I'm just curious if you think any of those or many of those voters would vote for Elizabeth Warren.
Sure. I think we kind of oversimplify the electorate. I think there are plenty of people that would have voted for Trump or Sanders. I'm not so sure those people would vote for Senator Warren. I think that she's a little bit different than him. I think.
And why is that?
More kind of more low to the ground. I'm not confident that that Warren can just pick up all those voters the way that he did. Even though Warren has spoken compellingly about the middle class in the past.
So, but why do you believe that?
I just think Senator Sanders' campaign just felt a little bit different. It was sort of a, you know, he was never sort of this national superstar before he ran for the presidency. I think that he spoke very convincingly about the little guy getting screwed. I know that Senator Warren does that too, but I just always found Senator Sanders to be a bit more authentic, and I think authenticity is really important for voters.
Well, that's Massachusetts Republican activist and political writer Ed Lyons. Ed, thank you.
Thanks for having me on.
Anthony, pick up that point there from Ed about the authenticity factor, because this isn't the first time we've heard this about a female candidate for president.
Yeah, I think it's such an important point. And you know, I'm not in a position to sort of assess whether or not Elizabeth Warren is going to come across and convince people that she's authentic. But clearly that is the challenge. I mean, I went to a lot of Donald Trump rallies leading up to 2016, talked to a lot of his supporters, and it almost didn't matter what he said. When I would try to engage people about policy, it almost was beside the point. What people cared about was, this is a real guy who speaks my language. Mm-hmm. And I know that sounds trite, and I know that sounds sort of hollow 2 years into his presidency, but it's the way a lot of people make their decisions. And if Elizabeth Warren can convince a lot of people that she's the real deal, that she's lived their experience, that she can really relate to them, then she could go far. But as Ed Lyons was suggesting, you know, if people are going to relate to her as part of an elite academic institution, part of the Northeastern coastal elite, then it's not going to be a good outcome for her.
Kimberly Atkins, yes. We've got just about 10 seconds left here. Just your final thoughts here as we go out.
Yeah, and I think that's right. I also think it's important to remember that Massachusetts voters really hate when their candidates run for national office, so I would be careful to use a Massachusetts poll to judge anything. Remember, mm-hmm. Mitt Romney didn't run for re-election because he couldn't, right. Because he was already running for president.
Well, a lot to look forward to in 2019. That's Kimberly Atkins, chief Washington reporter and columnist for the Boston Herald. Thank you so much, Kimberly.
Thank you.
And WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks. Anthony, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Jamie.
Happy New Year to both of you. Stay with us. We'll be back after the break. I'm Jamie Bologna, and this is Radio Boston.